The US trade campaign has taken aim at some culinary favourites. Scotch whisky, cheese and olives from across continental Europe, and French wine have all been slapped with a 25% tariff. It's a punishment greenlit by the WTO for EU aircraft subsidies it deems illegal. The tariffs also include a 10% tax on European-made Airbus planes.
A choppy session on Wall Street Thursday. Earlier on, stocks dropped on word that growth in the services sector had slowed to a three-year low, but recovered on the notion that the weak data will push the Federal Reserve to further cut interest rates. The big indexes snapped a two-day losing streak. The S&P 500 gained 0.8%. PepsiCo shares rallied. The beverage and snack maker's quarterly profit and sales beat analysts' expectations.
At San Giovanni metro station in Rome, passengers are queuing up at recycling machines instead of ticket machines, ready to deposit plastic bottles in exchange for train tickets. The new eco-friendly initiative rewards travellers in the Italian capital with 5 cents of credit for every plastic bottle fed into the compactor. That means you'll have to recycle 30 bottles to afford one standard ticket costing €1.50.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's October the 4th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day getting underway with more concerns about the markets this morning as we hit jobs report Friday. Another snapshot of the economy coming today as well. Global markets are generally weak today. It's been a tough week for the stock market. We'll try to digest as much of it as we can this morning. Get a little analysis from Paul Nolte, who is with us as he is every Friday. Paul is from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. And we'll bring in him in just a few minutes. We'll also talk a little bit about some of the manufacturing data this week that has caused some concern among investors. A little bit later in the program today, Brian Summers will be here, Senior Aviation Business Editor at skift.com. Brian has a cool story about Allegiant Airlines. You might fly them out of Rockford or maybe Milwaukee to sunny destinations. They have a plan, a new marketing plan. That might be interesting to you, and Brian will be with us at about 5:38 this morning. Of course, we'll also keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the 5 o'clock hour. So stay with us right here on 720 WGN. First, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk as we look at the futures market. A little bit of a weakness this morning as we look at the Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P futures. And an applied open on the Dow down nearly 100 points this morning. S&P and NASDAQ futures are down nearly a third. As we look around the rest of the globe, in Asia, a mixed day as well. The Nikkei ending the day up about a third, nearly 68 points. In Hong Kong, markets lower by nearly a percent. China has another holiday today, their ongoing week-long holiday there in China, so the markets are closed. In Europe, markets are generally in the red as well, with the exception of the FTSE in London, which is just up a fraction. In Germany, down by nearly a quarter of a percent, and in France, down by just a fraction. And crude oil this morning is at $52.70 a barrel. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. Vaping illnesses now at nearly 1,000 cases, and 18 deaths have been reported with no sign of slowing, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Of the 578 cases where doctors know what patients were using, roughly 78% of the patients say they had vaped THC, the active ingredient in marijuana. Again, about 1,080 cases of these vaping illnesses now all across the country. This morning we're hearing from HP. The company HP says it's cutting thousands of jobs as part of a sweeping restructuring plan. The tech giant announced that it's reducing its workforce by about 16%. Or as many as 9,000 workers. The company employs some 55,000 people. HP is hoping to move. The move will save billions of dollars by 2022. Let's begin front and center with the jobs report. The monthly jobs report is due out today. Analysts forecast anywhere from 140 to maybe 158,000 jobs created during the month. And we'll bring in Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management. Paul's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you again.
So what is your estimate on the jobs report coming today?
I think we'll take the under. Based on what we saw from the ISM data, both for manufacturing and for the service sector, the jobs component was actually fairly weak. And we saw some revisions to the ADP data that came out earlier this week to some of the back months, indicating maybe the job market is a little bit on the weaker side. But I'll flip that around a little bit. The weekly jobless claims numbers continue to be at, you know, near all-time lows. So we're not seeing that pick up. So, but I'm still looking at maybe 125,000, 130,000 with risks, I think, probably on the downside here.
The monthly average of jobs has been about 158,000 so far this year. That's down from 234,000 for the same stretch of 2018. So by any account, the job market is slowing, wouldn't you say?
It is, but that 150 is still enough to absorb new entrants into the job market, and that's part of the reason why we're not seeing the unemployment rate pick up. So that would be a big surprise if we see the unemployment rate tick up from its current 3.7 to something, you know, 3.8, 3.9. We would be very concerned if we see the unemployment rate get much above 3.9. It probably will not happen this month, but any of the future months where we see the unemployment rate get up much above 3.9%, we'd be very concerned that the recession that we've all been anticipating is probably a lot closer, if not on our doorstep. So as long as that rate stays in that 3.7 range, we're okay. But you're right, the job market is slowing, but it is still at a pace that is absorbing new entrants into the job market.
You mentioned the manufacturing data that we saw this week that caused some concern among investors, still is causing some concern. What will they be mining the jobs report for today, looking at what data to see if there is some sort of concern that we need to have there? Will they be looking specifically at the manufacturing? Will they be looking specifically at the service sector?
Yeah, they're going to be looking at a few things. One is we're going to see some data points from the census ramp up as we start to ramp up for the new census numbers. The hiring is going to be going on there. So we saw a little bit last month. We'll see some this month. We probably won't see any impact from the GM strike. Striking workers count as unemployed. So they will have an impact, or could have an impact on this month, probably next month's data. But I think overall they're going to be looking at, again, wage growth still, and really the general health of where those jobs are. And are they in manufacturing? Are they in construction? Because those still are the better paying jobs versus the service sector in general. So that's a couple of the areas that I think the people are going to be looking at. But I think really the headline number is going to be the most attention grabbing as to the health of the jobs market.
Paul, is the GM strike too young yet to have an impact on this? I know striking union workers can't apply for unemployment benefits, but there are some ancillary industries where people might be impacted, parts-related industries and companies, that those folks would be eligible if they've been laid off because of the GM strike. Is it too soon to see an impact from that?
It probably is. And as I said, it's one that it will take a look at, because when the strike started was after the period where they do the survey that comes up with the numbers and the number of jobs that are created. So we will probably see that in the next month's report, not necessarily in this one. And we don't see it, you know, certainly in the weekly data, as you alluded to.
We're focusing this morning on your money, talking a little bit about the jobs report, also focusing in on what investors are doing on Wall Street. Paul, I want to focus on that just a little bit here. We saw numbers this week, some up and down numbers. And did we eat away at all of September's gains this week?
Oh, we absolutely did. You know, and the market really has struggled here. One of the areas that you know, a lot of investors take a look at is comparing the market to moving averages, or where the average price is. And one of the things that got everybody's attention Thursday at least, was the fact that the markets are now below a 50-day moving average. So kind of a short-term view of things, and we're kind of getting ourselves back to the August area as far as where the markets are. We're about 3% off of all-time highs, so we're still not that far away from where the markets have been as far as a peak goes. That said, it's about the same level that we saw about 18 months ago. So really over the last 18 months, the markets have essentially moved in a very interesting way, but generally sideways from point to point. So it's been a frustrating time for investors as we kind of bounce around this 28 to 3,000 level on the S&P 500.
The company Barclays, you mentioned the recession R word earlier. Barclays out yesterday said up to a 30% chance of a recession within the next 12 months. I'm interested from a money management standpoint, and this doesn't necessarily have to be for investors only, but for consumers as well. If that is coming, if let's say we do find that is where we're headed, what steps do we take right now from investors and consumer standpoint to prepare for something like that?
Well, normally what you're going to see if we are actually in a recession is you're going to see a large hit to the stock market. When you look at history, when we are in a recession, the markets come off significantly, 15 to 30 or even greater, as we saw in 2000 and 2008, percentage points from when the recession was at least recognized or from the highs. So from an investor's perspective, the big hit that happens to the markets, it's hard to find good hiding places in a recession. There are some, kind of depends on how it unfolds and what it looks like. But that's the biggest part. The second part of it is we do see the unemployment number pick up. So from a consumer perspective, we see it in retail sales. We'll see it in earnings numbers from companies. And the consumer generally is going to be pulling back and saving a little bit more as they're a little bit more concerned about their job outlook in the future. So as all of that happens, we expect the Fed, and it's part of the reason why the percentage rate for the Fed rate cut in October has gone up almost to 100% here, we expect the Fed then to come in and cut interest rates in an effort to get the economy going and getting either consumers or businesses to start to spend. The Fed has moved preemptively to try to thwart that at this point and maybe become a little bit more aggressive if indeed we're a lot closer to that point than we currently anticipate.
And the Fed cutting rates is good for consumers in another way, especially consumers who have credit card debt. We'll see those interest rates go down. You mentioned savings. Should we also be focusing maybe perhaps on, now that we have lower interest rates on credit cards, paying some of those down a little bit?
Absolutely. And that's one of the interesting things that's kind of a conundrum, if you will, in the fact that credit card interest rates are actually fairly high in this very low interest rate environment. So they've been actually creeping higher. Those tend to move very, very slowly and tend to be very high relative to other forms of credit. So interest rates on credit cards certainly is one of the areas that we talk to our clients about, and making sure that you're not carrying a balance. You try to work those off because that's a very expensive cost of money. And so by paying those down, you're actually paying yourself that 10 to 15% interest rate on a credit card. So you want to get yourself as liquid as possible. You do want to keep your debt level fairly low, at least something that you can handle. Again, as worries may increase about your job situation, and certainly that's one of the things that we look at through all the economic data and try to discern where we're at in the economic cycle.
Yeah, we have just a little bit of time left here, Paul, but I want to ask you, what is good on Wall Street? Back to the investment part of this, are there any deals out there? What are you like at the end of the week here?
Yeah, at the end of the week, because of where we're at right now, at least from a very short-term perspective, probably more of the interest rate sensitive parts of the market. We saw real estate investment trusts, which have done very well. REITs have done well as interest rates have come down. Utilities, some of the consumer staples, you highlighted in the early part of the show, Pepsi's earnings came out above expectations. Not a lot of people are going to be stopping their soda consumption or Fritos or whatever. Those types of companies probably do a little bit better in an economic downturn than some of the others that might be a little bit more tied to the economy. And then finally, I think still technology, and technology has shown itself to be a little bit more recession-proof as companies look to streamline operations, invest more in technology to help their overall operations and corporate margins. So those would be a couple of the areas of the market that we would keep an eye on.
Okay, Paul, very good. I know you're always near the email, and you don't mind people emailing you questions. How can they do that?
No, absolutely. I have heard from a lot of listeners over the last few weeks, certainly, and they can always email me. We're happy to answer questions at pnolte@kingsviewam.com.
All right, Paul. Have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us.
We'll see you next week. Thank you.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul is an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Our focus now turns to the business of airlines and travel. And joining us this morning via Skype from Los Angeles is Brian Summers, Senior Aviation Business Editor at Skift.com. We've got a lot to talk to Brian about today, including Allegiant Airlines and some 737 MAX news. Brian, I want to begin with 737 MAX just to give our listeners an update. I know there were some developments this weekend in the grounding of that airline after that aircraft after those two fatal crashes. Give us an update on what's going on with 737 MAX.
Yeah, Southwest Airlines met with the media this week, or I should say the pilot union, and they said that they expect the MAX will be flying at some point early next year, as early as January, which would be relatively early, and as late as March. They seem relatively confident about this, which is a good thing, because you may remember, Steve, you know, really for the last 6 months or so, everybody has been like, we have no idea. But at this point, it looks like we're getting closer to the jet being approved by regulators. Both Southwest and the pilots union have said after the approval, which could come by Thanksgiving, airlines will be able to get these planes flying within about 45 to 60 days. Southwest has said that they're going to give their pilots extra training, and it's actually going to take a lot of man hours just to get the planes ready. It's kind of like a car that you haven't driven for 8 months or so. It needs some work before it can fly again. It sounds like it's going to take up to 200 man hours per aircraft just to get the things ready to fly again.
Yeah, that's a lot. I know this safety issue is one that a lot of people have been watching and paying attention to. Does Boeing feel like they have found the fix to whatever the problem was?
It sounds like it, Steve. I think everybody is pretty confident that this airplane will be flying again fairly soon. Boeing is happy. The airlines are reasonably happy. Of course, they're going to want compensation at some point, but we're getting much, much closer, I think.
All right. Well, again, we'll stay tuned for that. Ryan, you've written a cool story this week about Allegiant Air, and I know this probably doesn't ring with a lot of people because it's just not one that we pay a lot of close attention to, but Allegiant Air is hoping that an NFL stadium in Las Vegas might boost its recognition a little.
Well, Steve, I suppose it already has boosted its recognition, right? You and I are talking about Allegiant Air, which is a pretty small airline that doesn't fly to Chicago, O'Hare, or Midway, on the radio in one of the biggest media markets in the country. This, of course, was Allegiant's plan. Allegiant is, as we said, a small airline, Las Vegas-based, but what they're going out and doing is they put their name on the new NFL football stadium in Las Vegas. People may know that the Oakland Raiders are moving to Las Vegas next year, and Allegiant has come out and said, we want to be a big player in the U.S. travel space, and the best way to do that is to align ourselves with America's most popular sport, the NFL. The interesting thing, Steve, is that Allegiant is Las Vegas's hometown airline. So in Las Vegas, I would tend to say that people know what it is. So what Allegiant is doing here by putting its name on the stadium is saying, okay, well, if you live in Chicago, if you live in Wisconsin, if you live in Michigan, you're going to watch maybe a Bears game, or dare I say on the radio, a Packers game. You're going to see your home team playing in Las Vegas. You're going to say, what is this stadium that they're playing at? Allegiant Stadium? What is this company? And then the next time you go and book travel, you might book Allegiant. One of the interesting things about Allegiant is they're kind of like Southwest in the way they distribute their tickets. So if you go to Kayak or you go to Priceline or you go to Orbitz, you're not going to see a ticket on Allegiant. You have to go directly to their website. So Allegiant really wants people in the rest of the country to know exactly what they are. They think the NFL will help them do that.
Yeah, and even though they don't fly out of Chicago directly, I'm looking at their flight map. Around the Midwest, they do fly into some cities that we're pretty close to, like Milwaukee and Rockford, and I believe there are a couple of places in Michigan and downstate Illinois as well. So it's not out of the question that people can't get a flight if they're listening to us today.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, you can go to somewhere like Rockford and maybe fly to Florida, and I think that you'll find, I mean, I don't want to do their advertising for them, but you'll find that they are a lot cheaper than most other airlines. They're a very low-cost airline. They make a lot of their money selling vacation packages, so you can buy the flight, the hotel, the car, and get a really cool deal that way. But the problem is that if you're in Chicago and you want to go to Florida, you're used to going to certain websites to look. You never look at Allegiant. You never look at Rockford, and so you don't know the airlines there. Maybe the NFL will help with that.
Do you think this is part of a bigger plan, a marketing plan, perhaps at Allegiant to expand into some bigger markets?
Yeah, Allegiant has said they want to expand into some bigger markets, and they're doing so already. They're still avoiding the Chicagos of the world. So when they say they're expanding to bigger cities, they're in Cincinnati now, they're in Pittsburgh, they're in Memphis, so mid-sized cities like that. They do fly to LA, and they do fly to the New York area as well. But they treat those like vacation destinations. So they're bringing people from smaller cities to Los Angeles so that they can, say, go to Disneyland or something like that. But in the case of Rockford, what they're doing is nobody's going on vacation to Rockford, of course. So they're taking you from Rockford to Florida on vacation. And Florida is the destination, and Rockford is the place that you originate from.
Ryan, I want to talk about another story that I saw this survey that was posted yesterday by Bankrate.com that shows nearly 46% of U.S. adults who have one of these airline or hotel rewards programs let their points or miles expire at some point. That's a big number of people.
It is a big number of people, Steve, but I'm not surprised. I'm a travel expert. I have points in so many different places, in hotels and airlines. I probably have more than 10 point accounts. I think there are a lot of people out there like that. Some of these expire, some of them don't. Even if you're on top of it all the time, it's very hard to really know what points you have where. So it's just so hard. Some companies are coming out now and saying that their points or miles are not going to expire. We talked about that recently with United Airlines. They said you can keep the points forever. Look, I'd love to tell people you should always be on top of your points. You probably should be, because they are worth something. But I know that everyone has more important things to worry about, right, than when their miles and points expire. So, you know, try to pay attention, but sometimes you're going to lose these things, and it kind of is what it is.
Yeah, I was going to ask along those lines of paying more attention, are there any other things people can do to make sure that they're on top of this?
You know, I think that there are some apps or things, websites that will monitor your miles and points accounts for you and tell you when they expire and how to use them best. But I don't use them myself. It's all my information about my accounts is in my brain, and I do lose track. But I think for a lot of people, you just try to keep track of these things as best you can.
There's another story out there that I think a lot of people heard this story in the last week or so. Thomas Cook, this travel and vacation sort of company that did vacation packages, has folded. Is this more of a canary in a coal mine story about some of these companies?
Yeah, and you know, there are a couple of things at stake here. One of them is, as you mentioned, Steve, Thomas Cook was a package operator. So they sold air, hotel, car packages. you know, we talked about Allegiant doing that earlier in our segment here, and you know, that's still a good business, but it isn't what it used to be. You know, we have the internet at our fingertips. People like to buy travel as they want to. So they buy the flight at one point exactly where they want to go, then they buy the hotel, then they buy the car. So they're not looking for packages in the way that they used to be 20 years ago. You know, you'd fly from the United States to Europe. You would have no idea what to do or where to stay. So it would be easier to buy the package. Now you do it yourself. So that was one thing. The other mistake that Thomas Cook made, if you can believe it, Steve, is in the last few years, they were opening physical stores in Europe so that you would go in and pick your vacation package. It was like they didn't realize that the internet existed. And truthfully, even today, if you're going to buy a vacation package, you're going to buy it on the internet, not on the store. So that was one thing. And then another big trend that we are seeing is Thomas Cook not only was a package operator, but they ran an airline in Europe. It's a tough time to run an airline in Europe. There are many more airlines in Europe than in the United States. There's so much competition. And believe it or not, Steve, we at Skift, where I work, have calculated that 7 European airlines have gone out of business in 2019. That's incredible.
Okay, Brian, good stuff. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Brian Summers, Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift.com. Make sure you follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Summers and Skift as well at Skift. And sign up for their weekly airline innovation report, which comes into your inbox at skift.com/airline.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, we're seeing some weakness on the U.S. futures market this morning. Heading to the opening bell, Dow futures are off more than 100 points, down nearly a third. S&P and NASDAQ futures are off more than a third each as well. Markets are generally mixed in Europe this morning and mixed in Asia as well, although some big losses in Hong Kong, down nearly a full percent. Tokyo, the only bright spot, markets there up nearly a third. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Yesterday, soybean futures weakened, retreating from some early gains on technical selling after failing to take out the 10-week high that had been hit on Tuesday. Wheat futures ended little changed, and corn futures just slightly higher. Right now, traders are looking ahead to the next USDA report on corn and soybean harvest forecasts. That's due out next week on October 10th. But at the end of the day yesterday, the November soybean contract down 2 cents, the December wheat contract down a quarter of a cent, December corn down just half, or I should say up just half a cent. Not much change in the marketplace yesterday. But livestock cattle futures again higher on cash market strength, while hog futures were weak. Some of the cattle trades in Kansas and Texas were reported at $105 per hundredweight. That's near the top of last week's market prices. On the calendar, and we're moving into the weekend with the World Dairy Expo in Madison, Wisconsin. That will continue through Saturday. And at the closing session on Saturday evening, the Supreme Grand Champion Dairy Female will be named. That's an all-breed competition, always a highlight for the conclusion of World Dairy Expo. And in addition to that, farmers hoping for some drier weather so that the harvest can continue. Getting reports that it is moving ahead, but very slowly. So we'll hope we get better weather in the upcoming days. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right, Orion, you as well. A couple of stories from the business ticker as we leave you this morning. Britain's Minister for Europe says he's hoping the European Union leaders enter talks on the UK government's latest Brexit deal in a fair spirit. Otherwise, the country will leave the bloc at the end of the month without an agreement. The British Minister for Commerce, Christopher Pincher, called the British government's new Brexit proposal a good, fair, and reasonable compromise that presents a broad landing zone for talks that would enable the UK to leave the European Union in an orderly and friendly way. He was speaking today after availability of another president there in the UK during a state visit. Key European leaders have already said that they consider that the measures British Prime Minister Boris Johnson proposed yesterday fall far short of the concessions needed to forge a deal. Some news involving Sports Illustrated. The company's new owners said that they will lay off more than 40 jobs out of nearly 150. A spokesperson for Maven, the company now managing the magazine, says that it will add 200 contractors to cover college and professional sports teams. The people will be independent publishers, contractors, but according to the new company, professional journalists. The Japanese have ended their annual whaling hunt. A company ship returned to port early today after meeting its annual quota. Japan has been under international criticism for continuing the tradition of whaling. The 223 whales that were expected to be captured and killed by the Japanese fishing vessel apparently were a part of that quota that was met by those Japanese whaling ships returning to port today. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Friday, October the 4th. Of course, the big jobs report is due out today. Analysts estimate anywhere between 140 and 158,000 jobs created. We'll also get a report on international trade. On the earnings calendar, Onward Holdings and Cicada Seed Corporation. And a lot of Fed speakers out talking about monetary policy today, including Randall Quarles, Lowell Brainard, and Neil Kashkari, all speaking on Federal Reserve policy. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, October the 4th.